And so you looked far back into the history of currency. How did you find the physical representation of money evolved over time?
Well, money begins actually in a place that you may not expect. So in the book, I talk about this economic myth that's been handed down over generations. Maybe the birth of it was Aristotle. And, you know, money began when there was bartering. And I found that, well, the anthropologists have looked at this, and one of them at the University of Cambridge says that there's never been a culture in the history of the world that's relied on bartering. What people rely on is exchange and in debt, social debt transactions. So if you go way back into our ancient history, what was the first form of money? It was doing debt. It was having social capital, doing favors for each other. And so, like when you were the caveman, when you would kill some great game and brought it to the feeding station, you would have to share that with your friends and people who are part of your tribe. It was really important because if you didn't share that, then you may not be invited back to a future feeding session. So this idea of debt is really, really important. Social capital is really the first type of currency. And then, of course, throughout the book, I walk through the entire history of money because then you get coins in the 7th century in Lydia, and you move forward from that. But I really think the most important thing that this book uncovers is that social debt is the first and probably most important type of currency in the world.
So as currency evolved like this, from favors to coins, I imagine so did the designs that went on our money. As you looked into this history, how did you find art became part of money?
Well, there's long been a history between art and money. And some of the ancient Roman emperors were coin collectors, numismatists. And as I, in my book, as I travel the world, I always meet with coin collectors in Vietnam, Sri Lanka, and because the coins really represent the society in which they were made. So, for example, I was in Vietnam. I was in Ho Chi Minh City in Saigon, and I met with a coin collector there, and he showed me an ancient coin from, I think, the 10th century, the early, very beginnings of Vietnamese history. And he said, "Kabir, look closely." And to me, it was just a bunch of symbols. I couldn't really make it out what it was. And he said, "Hold it in your hands." And I held it in my hands. And what did I see? What did I feel? He said, "The thickness of the coin," meaning that if it's very thick, it was made during a time of economic prosperity, meaning there was enough metal to go around. And then he said, he gave me another coin. He said, "Look at this coin. It's very thin." He says, "This coin is very thin, and it was made during a time of warfare. There was not enough metal to go around to make coins and to have them kind of flourish throughout society." Also, the script of the coin. So in this Vietnamese coin I was holding, you could easily read the script, which meant that the ruler had more interest in educating his people, was more literate. And on another coin that he showed me, it was difficult to read, and sure enough, the leader was a warlord who had very little interest in education. And so the coins, they're not just coins, they're symbols of society. They're symbols, they're a collective cultural fossil of a society. And so, sort of going forward, just, you know, those quarters that we have now, there's those state quarters, every state has their own quarter. And that was designed in the 1990s, and when the U.S. Mint and the Treasury put out the request, they asked artists, they said, "Listen, we want the best artists to represent the collective story of America." And so all those designs were made by some of our best artists. And why? Because money represents the ideals and values of a society. It did in ancient Vietnam, and it does today with American quarters.
I read about your example of the counter-stamped coins in the Philippines. Could you share that story?
Sure. I was in Manila in the Philippines, and I met with the Philippines Numismatic and Antiquarian Society. It was a small group, and they showed me a very unusual coin. They're made in the 1830s, and we'll go back a few years before that. One of the most beautiful coins in the history of the world is called Dos Mundos, Two Worlds. And these are the coins that the Spanish kings and queens issued and which circulated throughout their vast regions. Because at that time, Spain had one of the biggest empires in the world. And they were called the Dos Mundos coins. And they were made in Latin America, so Mexico, Colombia, because these countries had metals, right? Argentina, named after the silver, argent. And so they took these coins and then they circulated throughout the Philippines. And so what was happening in the 1830s was a lot of these Latin American countries were in revolution. They were, you know, trying to win their freedom from Spain. So they started printing their own currencies when they had signs that said revolution, freedom, independence. But the problem was Spain still needed these currencies, still needed these coins for the other parts of their empire. So what did they do? They took these Dos Mundos coins that now had symbols of Latin American freedom, and they stamped over them, then issued them for circulation in the Philippines. So when you look at them, what does it look like? Imagine a quarter, and imagine the British king or queen stamping over it and just putting a little crown over George Washington's head and then circulating that in India. So why is this coin so fascinating? Because it literally shows civilizations colliding, and you can see that a coin represents more than just metal. A coin represents really an era and shifting power relations in the world. I go into this in the book with some detail, and it's one of my favorite sections.
Why do you think people from all different cultures want to have art on their money? For example, like, why not have just plain coins or simple paper bills? Why are they so intricate?
They're intricate because we've always had an interest in, humans have always had an interest in art and design. You know, when I studied what's going on in the brain when you're dealing with money, the part of the brain that lights up are the part that's involved in symbols, right? So there's a part called, and what is a symbol? A symbol is something that has emotional meaning. So for instance, if I just showed you, if you were to take a picture of your mom and she's just a woman with tall brown hair, that doesn't mean anything. But if you start to associate her with nourishment, someone to take care of you, she becomes a symbol for something else, your mom. And so I go into the neuroscience of symbols. And so for example, they show pictures of people looking at money, and then when they rip up money in front of them, what part of the brain activates is the parietal network, is the nucleus accumbens. These are the part of the brains that activate when you see symbols, so when you see tools. And so there's a psychological and neuroscience reason for why we create symbols. Humans are really the only species that can think in this critical symbolic way. And so that's why 30,000 years ago you have so much cave art. And for example, one of the symbols I found really intriguing is if you look on a dollar bill, if you look on U.S. currency, you'll see that the symbol of the eagle with a ribbon in its mouth and clutching some bow and arrows. And that symbol, we think it's an American symbol, but it actually goes back quite far. It goes back to ancient Mesopotamia. It goes back to the Babylonian times. And so the symbols aren't just, we think of like, oh, this is an American dollar with American symbols. But a lot of these currents go back further into history than the founding of America. So it's something deeply evolutionary. There's neurological roots for why we want to make symbols. We've been doing it for a long time. And a lot of the symbols have remained the same throughout history. It's just the context of them changes over the years.
Reading through your book, I was thinking about how I interact with money these days, and I realized that I really look at physical money a lot less often than I look at credit cards or bank statements. Do you think those pieces of plastic also have artistic or cultural value?
Sure. I think a lot of the credit card designers, for example, try to have affinity programs with the university that you go to. So a lot of the credit cards that you use have some particular company that you want to identify with, a Delta card, whatever it is. So yeah, art is very important to our identification with money. When you use money, a part of the brain that activates is the insula. And what does that mean? That means that it's a fear part of the brain, meaning that, or even the amygdala, the fear, another fear region of the brain can activate, especially when you see something that's too expensive. And so what happens when they've found studies that when you spend money now and you don't use cash, like those parts of the brain don't activate as much, meaning that there's less pain when you use a credit card or when you don't see the payment at all. Increasingly, I think credit card companies want to put, in using credit cards, they want to create symbols that we identify with in order to make sure we spend more readily with them.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want to-